Good afternoon and welcome to the Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. It's your drive time show. Today is Thursday and tomorrow is Good Friday. I don't know good for who. Maybe for, you know, teachers and police officers. But anyway, we are here until the hour of six, as always. We'll keep you company as you, as you drive. For those of you that have public holiday tomorrow, relax. Even when you're not driving, we'll still be here.
Yeah. And you'll still be able to listen to us.
And
just
please,
letting you know, you will still listen to us.
And please do drive safe. You know, this is, this is the time when everyone wants to travel and, you know, you have a traffic congestion and you have some people, you know, trying to play Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Important thing is still come and listen to us.
Yeah.
That's all.
Just tuning in between.
You know, we're not threatening.
Oh, no, we're
not. We know who you are.
Yep.
Just come listen to us.
We know where you are.
Okay, you know I don't want to sound...
You know, particular set of skills.
Well, as you said, Helmut...
That we have acquired over a long career.
We know where you are.
Man, that guy... whoever wrote that line...
I think he did.
Whoever wrote that line was a
genius. Line. You don't know who I am, but I know who you are. But anyway, yeah, let's leave the dramatization. So yeah, we have another particular sort of like a drama, not a drama as a drama, but rather a drama based upon a discussion that's obviously based upon with some people, but some particular sort of like interest groups have also highlighted specifically Namibia's particular first feat, which I don't know, Helmut, let me ask you this. Primarily, and I'm not asking you to, you know, to sort of like criticize this particular component, nor am I going to criticize this as well, just so that you know, dear listeners. But how do you feel specifically in the aspect of looking at the difference between women being in leadership versus men traditionally being considered to be the leadership occupiers? The reason why I asked this particular discussion, because as our talk for today is literally somehow centered on such a particular component.
Yeah. Look, for me, you know, every time, and this is actually something that I've written about. Well, it's all over my comedy material.
Yeah.
Because the question, as a comedian, I like to stand somewhere more like look at both sides of the debate and try to see what as you know the main more like points of argument that are being made, especially and I try as much as possible to do the same, even with even about the leadership question.
Yeah.
Because you have for a lot of cultural and religious reasons and somewhat philosophical as to why one gender, for example, between men and women, why one gender is better at being at leadership than others. So you have this whole raging debate and for a very long time, if you look at basically all throughout mankind's history, we men have dominated by the power structure.
Mm.
And this is not just in Africa, Europe, or anywhere. This is basically across the planet.
Yeah.
We have dominated, for the most part, we have dominated the power structure. Now, you are seeing, and I don't think I have enough historical reference enough to say that this is the first time that women are being recognized in the state of power. But when you look at the, when you look at the history that we have today, for a very long time, women were more like, just sidelined, especially if you look at it from the, the model of leadership that that we've adopted, the Western one.
Mm.
Now, here's the thing. Every time, for example, personally, I hear my fellow guy saying, you know what, a man will make an excellent leader. But, if you are born a man, if you are a man, then that means you are you are inherently good at leadership. And if you are a woman, that means you are inherently terrible at leadership.
Yeah, that doesn't matter what character.
It doesn't matter what character, personality,
what
skin color, doesn't matter.
Religion.
As long as you are a woman, you are terrible at leadership. The question now, as someone that likes to read history, I always tell them, look, I don't think we have the historical reference to actually back up that claim. Because if you say Austrian painter, man, Jean Bethel Bougassa, man, Sania Bacha, man, the history is not a very good one. So when you say
what was the other one's name? The other crazy guy from Zaire, before it became the two Congos. The guy that we also highlighted in our
Mobutu,
yeah, Mobutu, in our DRC discussion earlier this year.
Yeah, so if you look at it, it's high time we basically come to realize that there are a lot of factors that goes into. There are a lot of factors that makes one a good leader, and none of them have to do with the agenda.
Oh, until you get to Pol Pot.
Oh yeah.
You get to Joseph Stalin
as well.
Until you get to who's the other guy? There was another guy that was also just as bad. That's obviously in terms of, you know, if you look at the leadership side of things.
Yeah, the leadership side of things, if you look at it, for a very long time that we, basically, our gender have dominated the power structure. We did not really lay the foundation of, we did not create a good reputation of us being in power.
Yeah.
We have created basically the West, World War One, World War Two, basically every kind of political conflict. If you read in the history and you look at who were dominating that power structure, it's been us. So if you say we are very good at leadership, then we'll have a very hard time explaining that.
Yeah. All those examples.
Yeah.
Specifically all those are examples.
We have one at home, Fisheron. Good luck explaining that.
No, we also have one currently active in the global economic scale of things.
Who's
bringing in a global recession.
Tariffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, who are in charge?
The boss tariff. Uh-huh. The tariff boss. I asked that question, Helmut, because the difference that you obviously also outlined has been a difference that not many Namibians also know about across the country. Now, it still also factors into the particular discussion regarding our talk for today. Reason being is that every time I see evidence of when women are in leadership,
mm-hmm.
specifically, there is a community development element.
Yeah,
you could probably argue from the sort of like wokeism angle for those of you guys that live a lot on social media and watch too much TikTok and Instagram and all the other particular social media.
Talk to me directly. Don't go through the corners.
No, not you. Not you. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the guys that ultimately, which has been the reasons why, what's his name? Elon Musk bought Twitter.
Yeah.
Where they obviously, you know, highlighted the aspects and supposedly of freedom of speech and stuff like that and identifying, you know, the aspects of freedom of expression, which mm-hmm. obviously is the precursor right to freedom of speech. The notions that emanate from this have been obviously discussions in terms of how societies have to realize that if you have to look at events, you can't just talk about it from just the perspective of just one of the two genders.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I said that, dear listeners. I'm sorry for those of you that obviously also fall into the broader spectrums, if you like that. But I have to identify it because primarily much of history has identified only predominantly two gender.
You're not following what's going on. Okay, you may have missed the whole Supreme Court ruling.
No, I know about the UK. I know about the if anyone knows about the UK ruling that came out. Just, I think, in this week.
Man, I was laughing at that thing. I was like,
because they, well, that UK ruling, just as a side note to listeners, just so that you know what happened. So the UK Supreme Court has said there is no clear, identification under the, what do they say? Under the law, the British law that, mm-hmm. They are, you know, you can have a multiple definitions of what a woman is
mm-hmm.
because they clearly say it is by gender. And it's by sex.
Yeah.
However, discrimination against people, obviously, who have done.
It's not condoned.
Who have done, you know, the, what do they call that? Those processes, you know, crossing from one gender to the next, stuff like that.
Transition?
Yeah, transitions, people have experienced who have undergone their transitions. They are not to be discriminated against. That is what that's, I'm just summarizing from what was also summarized for me. So I'm just summarizing it in that scenario so that you know primarily what that Supreme Court ruling is. Don't be like the other straight guys who went on gender bashing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, you guys don't count. You. No. what they say is that the law ultimately identifies and is based upon a scientific fact, which says there are only two genders under humans, and that's it. So that, and it was supposed to be about avoiding the ambiguity that reigned around should a person that experienced transition from male to female be put in a woman's prison.
Yeah.
Or a woman that transitioned from, or a person that transitioned from woman to man, should they still be allowed to go into a woman's toilet? Or should they still be allowed to access women's services? Or should they still be allowed to do this and do that, but the person is identified as a male, supposedly, on identification? The reason why that Supreme Court case was to provide the definition. Yeah. It was to clarify definitions. Which is one of the things that we don't do in Namibia, clarification of definitions, because all the height in Namibia was all about a electoral court challenge, which went to a Supreme Court challenge based upon, you know, and I'm still of the opinion that I suspect political parties don't pay taxes of people or organizations who are not. Probably. I'm putting that in inverted commas. Yeah. Someone can correct me. Don't worry. I'll own up to a mistake. They don't pay taxes. Ultimately, it had nothing to do with us, the rest of the country.
David Franz and I were more like having a conversation around this whole Supreme Court case ruling.
Yeah.
The UK one. And, one thing I've noticed too, with the change in leader, in U.S. executive, the change in U.S. executive officers, basically, this is the executive branch big guys, aka the president.
Mm.
One thing I've noticed is that, I've come to conclude that, we the people on the ground, as much as we assume that politicians are dumb, actually politicians are not, we are the dumb ones because we keep being taken for a ride all the time.
Yeah.
Every time there's a progressive leader in the White House, the progressive individuals, everyone that identifies themselves as the part of the progressive movement, they go bananas and push everyone who is conservative to the breaking point. Mm. And then watch what happens next. Next time, when there's a conservative person in office, conservative guys actually never learn. They make the exact same mistake that their progressive counterparts were making.
Mm.
They push everything to the breaking, everything to the breaking point. So during the Biden administration, for example, not just in the US, but the world over, the progressive guys wanted to shove all their belief down the conservative's throat. But now you see that the script is flipped.
Yeah.
Now it's the conservative.
Which looks like a revenge.
Yeah, it's more of a revenge tactics where every conservative is going, well, now it's our turn. You have to do it our way.
Yeah.
No one is taking a few steps back and going, you know what? Something is going on here.
Yeah. Or someone says, I'm a human, you're a human, I respect that you're a human.
Well, I respect you. Yeah. Let's just coexist.
Just respect.
Because this whole revenge trick.
Yeah.
Politics are cultivating on that.
Yeah, they are. And once again, like I always say, it's an unnecessary sideshow, Helmut.
Yeah, very unnecessary. Because, it's frankly exhausting.
Because if you look at the realities that are going to hit us in the rest of this year, our central bank said it yesterday. They didn't say it as much, but the other central banks around the world are saying the world is going to face a recession. The world is going to face a recession because of politicians who don't know what they want to do. It translates to us that they don't know what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
However, like you just said right now, technically it's entirely a sideshow.
It's basically a sideshow.
And the sideshow is founded on obviously what I found out, or what Richard Wolff found out, the economist, is supposedly that the tech companies that were the largest donors of Donald Trump's political campaigning last year, because they've got subsidiary or shares in mining companies in rare earth metal mining industry in Greenland. Hence, they're probably the guys behind the agenda for a new kind of colonialism taking place regarding rare earth minerals. Now, this is where our discussion, dear listeners, comes in. Because recently in this week, that's on Tuesday evening, the Vice President, Lucia Witbooi, was the main dignitary and main guest in a discussion that was based upon how women's leadership can factor in or drive the agenda of the African Union for 2025. If you don't know what the African Union's agenda theme was, dear listeners, I've got it right here. Don't worry. It's right here. It's obviously based upon the unresolved discussion of reparations and the colonial impact that was perpetuated, or that has left much, if I can say much, sort of like unanswered or unresolved elements. Mm-hmm. So the theme, just to jog your memory again, is known as Justice for Africans and the People of African Descent through Reparations. That's the AU, theme. How this obviously all started from was, and we've got an audio of the Vice President here, because we will probably play it a little bit later. That's if Helmut and I, we don't get, you know,
to get it out.
You know, we sometimes get carried away in our analysis. So, just to jog your memory, for those of you that did not listen to yesterday's On the Radar, that was between 1 and 2:30, specifically the particular report played there where the Vice President highlighted specifically there are certain particular things that in a Namibian context we've got to start off from. There's aspects of or dimensions of like forgiveness to be done and the likes and so forth and so forth. And then obviously because the Vice President is a national leader,
yeah,
you can't view her just as a member of one particular political party or because she's from one particular sort of like ethnic group in Namibia. No. She is a national leader. And as a national leader, obviously, she's someone that has to speak on behalf of the whole country. Doesn't matter what religion you're from. Doesn't matter if you've transitioned even. Just need to throw that in there. Or your particular economic position, she has to speak on behalf of us all. So, on Tuesday night, this particular event, Helmut, was obviously hosted in conjunction with the Action Namibia. They're the guys of, you know, access to information in Namibia, the guys that lobbied for the access to information legislation to be passed, which was passed by the previous president, Hage Geingob. That was in end of 2022. Yeah, end of 2022 leading into 2023. And then obviously Open Society Foundation, then, you know, they held this particular event on Tuesday evening. And I did not know that the Vice President was going to be So we finished up the show here and I left immediately to go there. Getting there, I then get the program of I knew that this particular event was slated for 6 to 8:30.
Yeah.
But I just did not know who would be the speakers. All I knew was that they were talking about restorative justice in terms of reparations and the African agenda of 2025, or the African theme of 2025, yeah, which played primarily into the discussion you and I have already had. I get the program for the event for the night, because it was a 2-day event that they have been doing since Tuesday. So, and the last day was since Monday, and the last day was Tuesday. Get there, I'm now ready for the Tuesday event, because I couldn't understand why this one, element of the overall event and program was kept for a nighttime event, and the previous day, the Monday's events were kept in the morning up to lunch. Or were held in the morning up to lunch. Yeah. And it was a bit odd because I then went like, okay, this means that there's, you know, some real substantive discourse going to take place. You know, some real knowledge is going to be shared. Yeah. Haba hello, brah. Vice President shows up. I was like, it's it. What's going on here? Why do I see protocol guys here? Vice President rolls up and she's one of the particular panelists. And she's, the particular main dignitary of the night.
Yeah.
So, under that particular theme, now I've given you the context, dear listeners, so that you guys can understand what actually went down. Now, what we're going to play, Helmut, is actually just the Vice President's speech before she engaged in the panel discussion. And The speech sets the tone. The vice president has noted that Namibia has actually been a trailblazer and a little bit of a inspiration to other African countries. Morocco, Algeria, there's a handful of other guys that have started engaging in terms of the countries specifically from Europe that were their colonial masters beforehand. In terms of now them exploring directly their own particular pathway of saying, hey, listen, we need restorative justice. Mm. Now, if you don't know, guys, what restorative justice actually speaks of. Restorative justice, it does include an element of reparations. It does include an element of, you know, trying to rebuild what was lost because of a conflict. Please do not confuse it also for the term, what's that term? Restitution.
Yeah.
Because you and I know what restitution means, meaning you put people back in the position they were in before they were disenfranchised or they were inconvenienced.
Yeah.
Now, it's impossible, Helmer, because you and I, we've never seen a time machine before. And would that actually entail that ancestors have to be dug up, you know, to be reimbursed and then be apologized? No, that's impossible because those people have already, they've already passed away.
Mm-hmm.
But we now obviously see that in a Namibian scenario and in a South African scenario, the inequalities and obviously that still persist. So in that particular light, dear listeners, we've got that plan for you. But the indication obviously has been, Helmut, that it's a pathway of seeing what role we as Namibia have played. Now, I've mentioned the vice president said forgiveness is the first particular step that has to take place. Remember, she's saying it in light of being a national leader.
Yeah.
In many cases, the unfortunate scenario has been that other political leaders, this is now from events from 2021, 2022, have highlighted, you know what? Take out the government, let the groups negotiate directly. And once again, we sit with a particular dichotomy, or not dichotomy, wrong word to use, wrong context also to apply. We sit with the puzzling perspective of what has Israel enjoyed from the whole of the Western world. And if you have to look directly just from Germany, the same country involved with us, they've received that 85 billion or 87 billion for over 50 years. Versus the planned 1.1 billion over 30 years to be distributed over 30 years. Now, I even had that debate last night with my sister. She said, no, Dwight, look at the 30 years as spanning over a generation. And I explained to her, but here's the thing. If the one particular aggrieved party who was not indigenous, remember many of those, Israelis, those Israeli Jews are Europeans. They've never lived there before 1950.
Well, that's why most of them, even including those ones that are in power, have West European names.
Yeah, they have.
All you just have to do is find their Wikipedia page and all their real names, and all of them ends with basically Eastern Europe type of names.
Most of them had their, if you have to look at ancestral roots. Most of them came out of Russia, came out of Poland, came out of, what's these guys here close to Ukraine? That other nations, Moldova, them, Ukraine,
Belarus in there,
Belarus, Czechoslovakia, which is now Czech Republic and Slovakia. They are Europeans.
Showed up.
European.
1,000 years ago. But anyway.
And in 1950, someone went and said in the Bible, you know what? We had this supposed religious land back then.
Yeah.
The promised land that, but there were Middle Eastern Jews there. Yeah. They are still there.
Yeah, they're still there.
But those guys were not European. These guys that you're now dropping off in the middle of the Middle East are European. Those guys that were
this is why I like the internet because, because now we have access to documents like the Balfour Declaration.
Exactly.
These are literal documents which were basically signed by a country. That letter is addressed to a family.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To one family.
To one family. That, you know what? go here, therefore.
Yeah. And.
Seriously.
And when you look at that template, which is a precedent, ne?
Yeah.
You look at that template. To also come to the realization, Helmut, now we have to speak from the legal precedents, because you and I are technically highlighting historical and legal precedents.
Yeah.
These are things that were allowed by international law, dear listeners. When you look at that particular discussion from there, for 50 years, one nation and the people that were impacted because of the Second World War
mm-hmm.
were allowed, and they were just, they've been given up until 2025. They are still being given up until 2025. When you come to the African discussion, we have to speak about development and development aid. There are even Africans, dear listeners, that are saying literally, development aid doesn't help. Development aid doesn't uplift. Because Helmut, here's...
Basically, there's an entire question around the whole word aid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, aid itself, not really much of a problem.
Yep.
The problem is, not just the purpose. The purpose is one. The other thing is, how many checkpoints this space, there are a lot of hands between the, between the benefactor and the recipient that, more often only, only breadcrumbs reaches the real recipient.
Yeah. Which is technically the other particular thing that you and I have technically, well, not technically, we actually discredited it already,
yeah.
Trickle-down economics, because development aid tries to install or tries to effect trickle-down economics, and it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't work, because we even have resistance against a conditional basic income grant, and, well, not a conditional one. That one is actually active, which is the old age pension grant and the orphans and vulnerable children and the disability, the disabled Namibians. Those are conditional basic income grants. I'm talking about a universal one, meaning helping able-bodied people who didn't pass school, who don't come out of the best positions in life. And unfortunately, they are hampered because of, for example, inaccessibility to money. That's it. Their parents don't have money.
Yeah.
They don't have money. I quote the very famous words of Gary Stevenson, the Englishman who was a trader. Did you ever watch videos of him on YouTube?
I don't think so.
He wrote a book recently. Now he's famous everywhere. He was invited even on Piers Morgan's show. Homeboy went and embarrassed other people. Yeah. Because Piers Morgan is a millionaire. That's the thing.
Now that I didn't know.
He is a millionaire. Piers Morgan is a millionaire. So Gary Stevens, who's also a millionaire, but Gary Stevens, he's a millionaire with a conscience. Let's rather say it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Stevens has to say, I watch the world that my father worked in. That's his words. That's his words. Not Dwight's words. He says, I watch the world that my father worked in. My father was a post office worker in London. But my father, if you had to look at his salary back then in the 80s and the 90s, he would not have been able to live today. And Gary Stevenson cites specifically at his friends and community members.
Mm-hmm.
Just because today, in 2025, what many Namibians also probably have realized, the distinguishing factor, Helmut, that allows the next generation to thrive is if that child to be born today, tomorrow, yesterday, or wherever, in 2025, has a rich father. That's the only distinguishing survival metric. So if a child is born today and the mother and the father don't have money, that child is doomed. But if another child is born today, which is the dichotomy now, literally, of the issue, if another child is born, but the mother and the father have stable jobs, they own assets, they have, what's the other word? Disposable income. That child will thrive.
Now, here's the thing. One thing I realized just after getting my first, that's my first job.
Yeah.
One thing I realized was that, your background plays a very big role.
Exactly, bro.
A very big role. Because, I'm just sitting with my colleagues we're all getting the same income, per month. Now, what they do with their income is not the same thing that I do with my income.
Exactly.
I still have a lot of investments to do back home. Now, their source of income, whenever they get it, they start budgeting for a car. They can save up for a down payment on a car, whatever it is that they want to buy. They can go on holidays or wherever they can save up for a holiday and stuff. Why? Because the parents at home have their own income. So they don't have to worry about mom and dad, and basically the siblings, some of them are still too young. They are still under the parents' care.
Yeah.
So these ones basically can start investing in themselves. So this way you begin to see one big difference is that, we don't like to acknowledge it, but your background plays a very big role.
Yeah.
It's not something that we like to say or hear more often, but it's a, it's one of those harsh realities.
It is.
It's one of those harsh realities we basically have to face every now and then. Well, your background is going to play a role.
It'll always be that dividing factor.
Yeah. Now, before we continue this conversation, let's take a quick break. I still have to, I was planning this morning to murder someone from IT for not putting all these ads on auto.
Okay.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge. As we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage. For the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always prepare.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Siwanasha Namibia, Kamberera omwakarunga koe pamwe na Imba. Inokara uri kwanima.
And welcome back. The time is 5 minutes past the hour of 5 minutes past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you are listening to the Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, we're here until the hour of 6. Now, before we continue this this discussion or this show, let's take a listen. From the Vice President. Okay, we are going to take a listen in a few minutes. We're going to take a listen from the Vice President's point, the Vice President's voice that was given during this, during engagement, the engagement that was held on women's leadership, women's role in leadership. And one thing that that's worth pointing out is that, the Organization of African First Ladies of for Development. Oh, that's a mouthful, so I just decided to go with to go with OFLAD. That's just the abbreviation. In February, elected new leaders for the organization at its 29th General Assembly held under the theme "Building on Beijing First Ladies Championing Women's Leadership and Rights Through African heritage. Now, the theme was put together to be in line so that it can be in line with, to be in line with the African Union's 2025 theme of justice for African and persons of African descent through reparations. Now, that's basically in a nutshell, female leadership or women's contribution to leadership, including that of reparation. Now, this is not the first time that it's not the first time that we're having a female leadership. We've had world kings and queens. It's just the Western model we use today, which is why we are celebrating. The Western model we use today. First female president. You have to understand the guys that brought you the idea have never had a female president in the past over 100 years. I'm talking about America. And also just to get on the nerves of some Catholics, including Dwight.
No, I don't care. I come from a single parent household, my guy.
Single parent household.
I'm fine. I know what women's leadership is.
Yeah, so we're still waiting for
potentially more democratic than some male households.
Yeah, I know. We're still waiting for two positions to be occupied by women.
Who?
Yeah, and then Papacy and the President of America. Well, anyway, you guys and
Helmut. Are we really subscribing to Christmas wish lists like that?
Thank you.
Everyone thought that they would do it with Hillary, but everyone was also like, but Hillary would start launching nuclear bombs.
Well, everyone was like, I mean, we don't have anything up against the women, but that woman,
yeah,
we have serious problems.
There were some things gonna pop off, that the whole world didn't want to see now.
So, just a quick break, then we continue.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Without further ado, let's take a listen to what the vice president had to say about particular engagement, which is in line with our topic for today. Please do stay tuned.
Yeah, the platform is organized under the theme of women's leadership and the reparations agenda. This is a continental and historical significance. The African Union has declared 2025 the year of justice for Africans and people of African descent. This is not a symbolic act. It is an affirmation that the legacy of historical injustices must be addressed through collective and personal actions. Namibia's experience is one that echoes across our continent. As a nation, we are born out of struggle. A people who suffered the brutality of the 20th century genocide, highly oppressive apartheid occupation, and generations of economic exclusion for most Namibians. Today, we stand as a democracy committed to healing, but also to holding space for truth. We are proud to be one of the few nations on the African continent engaged in a formal reparations process for genocide. While I will not speak about the ongoing bilateral negotiations between Namibia and the Federal Republic of Germany. No comment on the joint declaration currently underway. Under review, I must state clearly that Namibia is a global leader in the reparative justice movement because of our work on this front. And therefore intend to fully support the AU agenda on reparative justice to the extent that it is consistent with our foreign policy stance and does not compromise the integrity of our reparations journey or of African unity. Across the continent, several countries have also begun to chart their own paths towards reparative justice. Algeria has called for formal restitution from France. The Democratic Republic of Congo has initiated legal claims over colonial crimes. South Africa's post-apartheid and post-1994 transformation truth and reconciliation commission as one of the earliest models for symbolic justice in Southern Africa. And from what I've learned from yesterday's dialogue, there is a need for us to increase the pool of those that need to be held accountable for reparative justice. Zimbabwe is another example of countries that has raised demands around historical land deed possession. The road to reparations is very linear, but the message is clear. Africa is reclaiming its history and associated loss of land, items, family bodies, and other earthly possessions and reparation appropriate payment. I am well aware that there has also been a call for more meaningful dialogue on our own process, and as the new Vice President, I intend to look at the suggestions that are coming from platforms like this, which is welcome, and ongoing discussions on our own reparations dialogue. Namibia's liberation struggle was not only a fight for independence, it was a fight for dignity, for justice, and for the right to define our own future. And at the heart of that struggle were women, courageous, visionary, and resilient. From the battlefields to the negotiations, from exile camps to community organizing, the Namibian women were architects of resistance and pillars of hope. Leaders like Anna Mukunda and Mujeru Tala, Angolo, and many unnamed heroes helped shape a consciousness rooted in justice and equality. Women's leadership is a heritage that continues to guide us today, not just in the past. That same spirit of resolve, clarity, and compassion must guide us as we work towards reparative justice. Women are carefully and generationally aware of the multi-layered injustices caused by assaults, depossession, and colonialism. Both the dreams and the memories are carried by them. in the past. That same spirit of resolve, clarity, and compassion must guide us as we work towards reparative justice. Women are carefully and generationally aware of the multi-layered injustices caused by assaults, depossession, and colonialism. Both the dreams and the memories are carried by them. Compensation is merely one aspect of reparative justice. It has to do with acceptance, recovery, and change. A holistic perspective that centers communities, restores dignity, and guarantees that justice is a life experience rather than an idealized concept is what women leaders bring to this process. Their opinions guarantee that reparations take into account both practical requirements and sentimental realities. Thus, Namibia's post-colonial oppression path has not been easy. We have learned important lessons, for instance, that many conversations around reparative justice must be fixed with political maturity, ideological consciousness, and broad participatory consensus.
Welcome back. It's 19 past the hour of 5, and if you just tuned in, you're listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and that was the voice of the Vice President on the contribution of, or more like the presence of women in modern day leadership.
Yep.
And the contribution that they have, and this is one of those things that is somewhat very painful because, we have a female president and we have this hype, like, this is the first time that we are seeing women in leadership.
Mm.
But for a very long time, women have been in leadership. Now, this to me, at least, it's like we are discrediting, it just like points to the discreditation of every woman that have been in power before the 21st century. But, who have had the queens and kings, basically, basically in power. Now, this is where, the whole gender, who is good at leadership between men and women now becomes a very, interesting discussion.
Yeah.
Because unless you are talking about, unless you are talking about the US and the Vatican, the entire world have basically had people, the entire world have had people of, people of both genders in power. Although it's not, it's worth noting that, men have dominated the power structure for a better part of world history.
Yeah.
And take Egypt, for example. Every time that we talk about people like Cleopatra and Arsinoe, what do you think they were? Because when Ptolemy is at the 15th, number what Ptolemy that is, when finally kicked the bucket, he left the throne in, he left the throne, according to Egyptian tradition, the male heir is the one that will take the throne.
Yeah. Now, but I think only under rare circumstances, if there's not a male heir.
It falls to a female. Yeah,
takes over.
Now, I think the poor boy was at the age of 9 when his father died. Now, according again to religion and tradition, they pop up again. The heir cannot ascend the throne without a wife. And royals were seen as, divine beings, gods. They cannot just go around marrying any mortal.
Yeah.
Homeboy was forced to marry his sister. 16-year-old Arsinoe. Now you see the, that's us in church, ladies and gentlemen. That's, you know, us making the rules. I mean, we're good at this. You know, younger brother marry old sister, and then happily ever after. Now, and then there's all this whole power struggle of, you know, power struggle of the Egyptian throne that would make, you know, Cleopatra is the 14th very famous. Yeah, that and the allegations that, was that Mark Antony and Julius Caesar called a woman with a golden mouth for a lot of wrong reasons. But anyway.
Helmut. Oh my goodness.
I'm ready.
But
I'm
what ready, people, you know, but people
I'm reading
have,
a lot of wrong things here.
But what people had to understand from, specifically from, Cleopatra.
Yeah.
Remember that Cleopatra's lineage is technically Greek.
Yeah, it is.
What many people don't know.
AKA, you know, hence the name. He's from the Ptolemaic dynasty, but that name starts with a P.
And
but the P is silent in the same way that he pronounced psychology, so that points to the origin being Greek.
And what many people don't know about that ancestor of hers, which was her great-grandfather, Ptolemy, or Ptolemy, you can say Ptolemy or Ptolemy, is that Ptolemy was one of the generals of Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
Because what you also don't know is specifically that Alexander the Great is supposedly buried in Egypt.
Not Greece?
Supposedly not Greece.
Oh, well,
one of his deaths, one of his resting places is in Egypt.
Well, according to them, it was Greece at the time, so.
Yeah. So when you look at the particular, obviously the intricacy of that historical context, like you said there, but we're still focusing on the woman in leadership component. At least it's not a scenario, for example, like what Elizabeth I had to undergo. Remember that Elizabeth I was technically disenfranchised by her own father.
Yeah, King Henry VIII.
Yeah, Henry VIII, that was literally a serial womanizer. Well,
and
if we put woman...
Serial wife killer.
I wanted to sugarcoat it a little bit better. But...
Okay, serial wife...
serial... off with her head scenario. Because homeboy would just make up a conspiracy, accuse his wife, who's the queen, of something, and then appoints, if I was the government official that I had to sign the execution every time for a queen that your king had married, and then the king goes like, you know what, I don't like my wife anymore.
Can you divorce? Well, the Pope said no, so I don't see any way here, but, well, there's another option.
Yeah. Establish your own church, have your own rules and laws, and ultimately, if you divorce your wife, you can technically, execute her.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Henry VIII did, guys. And the British love making shows and discussion about him. But what they don't see, what we, the rest of the world, goes like, yeah, you guys technically had a womanizer for a king, plus the guy was a serial executor of his wives.
Jailed his child at the age of what, like 12?
I mean, if you look at what happened with Elizabeth. If you look at what happened.
Yeah.
Elizabeth was literally, she as a child, she was literally put away in a, you know, like you tell one child with a mother, like what
I. But how she rose from all that chaotic, family to run England and leave the legacy that she has left. Leaves us something to admire.
But we all know how she got that. Was because the brother that was appointed, that was made king after the father passed away, that brother was sickly. What was his name? Edward, whatever, the brother. He was sickly. Then he dies because of his illness. Yeah. He dies. And then the next immediate scenario is that she's got to step in.
Yeah.
Now here's the worst of the worst. She had, was it a cousin? Who was the
Queen
cousin?
Mary of Scotland.
Yeah, Bloody Mary. Her nickname was Miss Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
Not the drink, please guys, not the drink. Now, the reason why she got Bloody Mary is because she was Catholic, the cousin.
Ah,
the cousin
yeah,
was Catholic
cousin
and
was
Elizabeth
Catholic.
Is Anglican.
Anglican, so the Catholic Church did not like that.
They didn't like that. And obviously, because Mary was married to a Spanish or a... she was married to the French, to the Spanish king. At that stage, the guy that tried to invade England with the Spanish Armada.
Oh dear.
When Francis Drake took that whatever, ramshackle Spanish, English Navy that they had to quickly conjure up there and literally sank the Spanish Armada. Because the Spanish, and that's what everyone in history has analyzed. The Spanish Armada was so stupid. They first had to go get the invasion force in the Netherlands. The Spanish army was sitting in the Netherlands. The Spanish Navy was sitting in Spain. They had to sail up the English Channel
uh-huh.
to go get this, to get the Spanish invasion, the Spanish invasion force, which was the Spanish army. The English were like, okay, we intercept you right here.
Well, it's our channel.
Yeah. So they intercepted them right here. It's literally, there's a little space between England and France.
Yeah.
They intercept literally in that choke point in that naval corridor, that maritime corridor. Literally intercepted them there. Pops your uncle. You know, the rest is history, obviously. But what Elizabeth had to do, Elizabeth actually was the first sort of like English queen or queen in British.
Not endorsed by the Catholic.
Yeah, not endorsed by the Catholic Church. But she supposedly was the one that introduced sort of like a liberalist aspect in the broader British society. Now, remember, she didn't leave a child behind.
Yeah.
It was a it was literally Bloody Mary's child, own the son.
King James, there's something, something.
Yeah, yeah. Because that had to, that she made.
Isn't that the guy that is named after the King James Bible?
I think it's him.
Yeah.
I think it's him. Yeah. Then he inherited from his aunt.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how twisted is your family? Your aunt has to execute your mother.
Yeah, Queen Mary was like, well, I have a cousin problem here. What would, Queen Elizabeth, what would dad do?
Yeah, off with their heads. But anyway.
Okay, now I'm just turning it dark.
I know. We then obviously fast forward, another woman that has also provided prosperity in a country.
Yeah.
But this is also at the height of colonialism. Because literally when, what was our discussion? The conference of 1880.
The Berlin Conference?
The Berlin Conference.
Oh.
It was on 12 April. Was it 12 April?
Yeah, I think
no, 12 April was last week. It was in last month.
Yeah, last month, wasn't
it? We had that talk last month.
Wasn't that in, wasn't that in February?
Was it in Feb? I think, yeah, it was in Feb, yes. When we had that particular talk, right? Mm-hmm. Remember that conference took place when Victoria was Queen of England.
Victoria.
Yeah. Now, what many people around the world don't realize of what the British actually enjoyed was that the British enjoyed, technically through colonialism, which is literally what our discussion is also hinged upon. But you can obviously see the prosperity that women leadership has brought across the world through just singular entities. Remember, Cleopatra tried to ensure the survival of ancient Egypt at that particular time frame under the protection of the Roman army.
Yeah.
Because obviously she was the wife to an extent of Julius Caesar, but also the lover of what's his name, Mark Antony. Yeah. Both of the men were nobles.
Very powerful guys.
And generals, because they both had armies.
Yeah.
As opposed to who was the other guy that Julius Caesar had a fight with, Pompey. The other civil war, the other Roman civil war. Pompey was the other guy that Julius Caesar had an issue with, because Pompey also sat with an army. But here's what Pompey had. Pompey had a city as well, known as Pompey.
That one that in AD 70, the Mount Vesuvius was like,
we'll give you the biggest...
Capana? Sorry. Okay, that was uncalled for.
No, that was no Capana taking place. That was fossilization, my guy. There's no Capana taking place there.
Because or any still
bright.
Fossilized
there's probably a little bit of bright tendencies there, but there was no Capana there.
Yeah, there's one of the famous fossilization was of a guy that seemed to be, was fossilized in emotion. We still don't know that's what he was doing.
Are you talking about the other fossil?
Yeah, the fossil of the guy that looked like he was taking a suspiciously long shower.
You're talking about that one.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, the one I was thinking about was the lovers, the man and the woman that were fossilized.
Also fossilized.
Yeah. Because of the earth, because of that volcano, Vesuvius. Because the whole city was caught off guard because it happened at night. When everyone went to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then literally they got fossilized because of that. So if you don't know how that happens, dear listeners, it's a lovely scientific pathway you'll go down. It's lovely to read about.
It's lovely to read about, because this is 2025, not AD 75, and we're in Windhoek, not Pompeii, because it would not be a good experience.
Now I'm looking at mountains around us.
Relax, we're good.
No, Helmut, don't make that joke, but you're giving us bad luck.
Okay, we have an ad break coming up.
Are you ready for a fresh new flavor? Then enjoy the latest addition to the Vintook beer family. Vintook lemon-flavored non-alcoholic beer. It's got the same taste that you love, but now with added lemon flavor to guarantee 100% refreshment in every sip. Now that's 100% real. Head to your nearest store and enjoy the new Vintook lemon-flavored non-alcoholic beer for yourself today. Vintook, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it. Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. Auto Cash, it's that simple.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
So we come back, dear listeners, and obviously just before the break, in terms of the historical analysis that we gave you insights to, the last one I was technically still caught up on was, even if you had to look at like the Victorian period of, you know, the United Kingdom or Great Britain at that stage as it was known, is primarily there was, firstly, the Industrial Revolution took place under Victoria. Now, even though Victoria inherited an economy or an empire at that stage from her father. No, it wasn't from her father. It was from her uncle. Yeah. Victoria inherited technically a sort of like growing empire from her uncle because her uncle didn't have children. The United Kingdom or Great Britain under Victoria went through one of the most transformational periods, which is still cited by historians from that country and around the world as being the catalysts for many particular industrial activities springing out from. Now, don't worry, I'm not highlighting potentially that our president, that being President Nandi Ndaitwa, will have the same effect, because we're literally still we're only a month in of her tenure. So we're only a month in. Still early days. She has a term, 5 years. We have to see ultimately what happens. And obviously the particular discussion that the vice president gave on Tuesday night was one obviously giving an indication in terms of that you need this holistic approach to this reparations discussion. Because here's the thing, Helmut. There is, unfortunately, a ticking clock. The ticking clock has to do with Namibia's particular, if we now talk about the aspect of prosperity.
Yeah.
Remember the statement I made a little bit earlier to talk about this at the, before the audios, where I highlighted for a Namibian child to understand whether or not they find themselves in the doldrums of development, meaning they potentially might not have a job when they finish school, they probably might not finish school because they might have issues at home, versus a child that would be literally born with everything, is that the deciding factor in that I mean, I know it's the worst thing to not actually bring to bear for the listeners, but the listeners know about it already. They can just look around in their communities. Is literally the deciding factor is whether or not your father's rich.
In the 1970s, Johns Hopkins University conducted one of the longest studies of what you'd call geniuses.
Yeah.
That I think that study ran for over 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost if not over 50 years. And one thing that the study concluded was that and they were looking at I think either between 500 or 5000 between 500 of 5000 gifted students.
Yeah.
Gifted as in these are your your high IQ students. And one thing they realized was that not all of them became successful. And those ones that were successful, their success was to some degree attributed to their family background. And those ones that were one of the conclusion that they reached was that, those high IQ students that had some good family connections, it was easy for them to reach, excellence of their dreams.
Yeah.
Now, those ones, even though they had high IQ, those ones that had, those ones that did not have, good family connections in some excellence of power, whether company wise or national wise, they struggled to succeed. Mm. So basically, even if you have the highest IQ, succeeding is, success is not a guarantee if you don't have the right people that knows you. It's, of course, you have one of those very few, one of those very few example. Again, this is where your environment now comes in. That, you can be so good at cycling.
Yep.
Like you are a cycling genius. It's like your passion. You can do all these tricks with a bicycle. But if you are nowhere near the environment where you can monetize that skill, it'll just be one of those things where you do a few tricks at your school and they give you a few clips and that's it. You can monetize it.
Yeah.
So environment counts. Close proximity to the people in power counts, or close proximity to the people that are interested also counts. Take what I at least like to call Namibia's golden girls. Sorry, guys, I'm talking about athletics here. That's Masilingi and Boma. Now, you'll find if they were in a situation, for example, where they were far from someone who was interested in mentorship and help guiding them to exploit their skills to their advantage, like Hank Porter, for example, they would just be out there running as fast they can, but they're not making money out of it.
Yeah.
So a lot of pieces had to come together. They have the skills, and then they had someone in close proximity that identified those skills, and then so that you can run fast across around the school track, but you can do more with this.
Yeah.
And they found themselves at the Olympics. They themselves, they have the talent, but they you can bet they were just sitting there not knowing what to do with it.
But there's also a component, Helmut, that feeds into the success that they had to build up.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you're highlighting an athlete. We have to look at the discussion that is completely ignored in Namibia. How to take our sports realm to the next level. Now, in the same program of yesterday, the On the Radar, the Deputy Minister of Education highlighted three segments that he wants his ministry to look at. But he's just deputy minister, because right next to him is his boss, the minister, literally, that being Madam Steenkamp.
Yeah.
So the deputy minister, Balotti, noted specifically that he would like his ministry, education, because they're now pretty big as a ministry now.
Directorates are pretty
All those directorates, now, they it's now a pretty big ministry. So what he highlighted specifically is that entrepreneurship in Namibia, across the board, it shouldn't be entrepreneurship for the youth only. Mm-hmm. It's entrepreneurship across the board, that entrepreneurs need to be given that conducive support base to work from. Because you and I, we've highlighted exercises here every, in most cases here on Eagle FM. Specifically, if you take the Hyundai example,
yeah.
The Korean government put money and supported the Hyundai guys who are a bunch of construction workers. They were construction contractors who were working in Vietnam, building things for the American army. Now, how do construction guys move over to the...
establish one of the biggest car brands.
And building their own technology. How did that happen? You know what's even... And I know this is now what throws in a little bit of a side foot. So I saw on some guys' WhatsApp status a meme about... So it was supposedly a guy that posted on his particular social media that this guy took a screenshot of. How are we as software developers competing with construction and catering companies for a tendering application with the central procurement board? And his caption was like, make it make sense. Well, I just gave you the example. If Hyundai could go from being construction guys
to an
auto manufacturer, what are we talking about? The sky's the limit. That's why people should also start moving away from this notion specifically of saying, yeah, just because you're a journalist, Dwight, you can't know more than what you're just supposed to know about. That is impossibility.
Just, you know, just stick to and that's it.
That's it. Or you, Helmut, since you studied law, you can't be a comedian. Who told you that you should be that?
Now, this is where you'll find interesting that every combat game in terms of combat as in military game, one of your favorite gun will be, take for example, the Beret series, Beret M83, Beret M86 and all those things. And it's a high caliber sniper rifle. That thing was developed, that's a brainchild of a photographer basically.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. A photographer gave the whole idea. Basically, this was a photographer who was just, I think, interested in guns. Pitched his idea to the military guys. They picked it up, and today it's one of the most loved sniper rifle across the planet.
Very powerful.
50 cal. So believe me,
yeah.
Bulletproof vest is not gonna cut it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Hamid, even look at Grand Theft Auto, one of the world's most highest grossing video game titles.
Yeah.
Grand Theft Auto, the success behind Grand Theft Auto was not because of design. Do you know what it was behind?
Okay.
Story.
The storyline.
Just story. Having a story to tell. And being able to immerse a gamer in playing the story. That's the reason why I could tell people video games are a storybook that you are participating in.
You are part, you are a character in that book.
You're a character.
You're not just reading it.
Yeah. That's also one of the reasons why you can immediately sometimes identify people who don't read fiction or non-fiction.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come and tell you about a textbook and you go like, ah, yeah, what, man? We know it's a textbook. That information doesn't change over 50 years. But people's creativity can change in a blink of an eye. Because if you come and tell me, Helmut, about, let's for example say, what's one of your favorite fictional authors that you sometimes read?
Fictional?
Authors. Make-believe stories.
Make-believe stories?
Yeah.
I like to go with George Orwell.
With Orwell?
Yeah.
Okay, you're on Orwell, right? One of the best writers that I've met was a guy that took me, I was so impressed with that book. Because I've never read such an adventure book before. The book's name they made a TV series last year about it. Shogun. Or Shogun, as you're supposed to pronounce it. Not Shogun. Shogun. So this book was written by James Clavell. But the book came out in the 70s. And in the 80s, Pierce Brosnan's featured in the remake or the TV adaptation of this book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was also spanned over multiple episodes. And obviously it came out once again last year with, what's the guy, Yuroki Sanada, the Japanese actor, who played opposite, what's his name, Tom Cruise in The Last Samurai. Then obviously featured as sort of like the main, one of the main characters in the storyline in last year's version of the same story. Do you know how many times I read that book, Hamut?
Mm-hmm.
5 times. A book of more, a book of 1,000 pages. I read it 5 times. Now, the reason why I read it 5 times, James Clavell is not a historian. Even though James Clavell drops you off parachute first, feet first, head first, everything first in medieval Japan, just as the Sengoku period is about to kick off. Now, if people don't know what the Sengoku period is in Japan, Sengoku period is literally the, it's their 100 years civil war.
Not the right time to be in Japan, let's just put it that way.
It's literally their 100 years civil war. That's the Sengoku period. Now, he obviously, all he did was just, you know, chop and change names of historic characters in order to drive this, the discussion of an English pilot, not someone that flies the plane. Back then, for the, you know, exploration by sea, they did have pilots. These were guys that were literally like, they were the guy charting the course.
Navigation.
Technically, yeah. Because one of the nicknames that the character gets his nickname is pilot or navigator. Because you had a ship's captain, you had a first mate and a bosun and all that, but they needed a pilot, a navigator. And that pilot navigator also helped with cartography, meaning charting or drawing new maps.
Yeah.
To lead the way for further, you know, contact after first initial contact made. James Clavell, the author of that book, he himself had to do so much research as a fictional writer in order for this book to be as compelling and selling the feature of historical adventure set in a period of medieval Japan.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to the writing thing, one thing that draws me very close to George Orwell, even though he's not, it's how he uses real life situations and basically, bury it in more like fictional characters. But take Animal Farm, for example. Can you imagine living in Soviet Union and you are writing about Joseph Stalin? That's not a good idea.
Ah, and you're calling some people in the society.
I know.
The pigs, some animals are thinking, making them more important than the other animals.
That's not a good idea. So he had to basically fictionalize a lot of things. But when he just said, when you look at his writing, the fictionalization of it, makes it part of the genius.
Yeah.
Because, it's not the man-made type of fiction.
Yeah.
Because that's like hardcore fiction. And, which is why, basically all throughout his life and all in all his writing, even by identification, George Orwell is not identified as a fictional writer. He's basically a writer and a journalist by profession, I think.
No, but he was actually, he's actually considered a, what do they call that? A social commentator.
Commentator. But now if you're going to, more like at this point, just go with a political commentator.
That too, yeah.
But. It was a
even though he's a great admirer of socialism, I think.
And he was a critic at this time. Now, the genius behind is the way that he criticizes a regime without going point blank and give them a reason to separate his head from his body. So he decided to go with more like
accuse him of espionage. That's not the thing back then.
One guy on TikTok says that, in the old Soviet Union, and he says it with an Eastern European accent, which makes it very funny, that, in Soviet Union, there were only two TV channels. Channel number one was the one that was telling you how good life in the Soviet Russia was,
mm.
and how life was terrible in, you know, in the rest of the world. Mm. Basically, America with the exact same thing the US is doing right now.
Yeah.
Basically Western world. And the second channel, when you turned to the second channel, you only saw one, you know, KGB guy that was telling you to go back to channel one.
You had no choices.
I know. Now,
Now I understand why the people were telling the story of socialist Poland when the Poles in Warsaw, the residents of Warsaw would, when the socialist government, just before the fall of the Berlin Wall, it was somewhere in the 80s, man, and there was a great debate happening in socialist Poland where they were saying, yeah, the normal citizens should not have a right to decide what kind of content they can, you know, they can consume, meaning like government statements and the like and government propaganda.
Yeah.
And do you know what did in protest, what the residents did? All they did when the national broadcaster started broadcasting on their TVs, all they did is they took their TVs and put it in the window with the screen facing to the street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they
just
did.
Just watch yourself.
Yeah. Just play that message to yourself.
Oh, man, it's amazing they didn't just choose to switch off the TV. They decided to...
No, but they wanted to show the state. Listen to your own stuff.
We're done listening.
Yeah, no, it's not about switching it off. That would be too easy.
Yeah.
You need to show them, man, listen to your stuff there. We'll play it to you in the streets. So listen to yourself. But man, obviously we've digressed greatly.
Now, here's the thing. The 180 degree.
By like Okahania also.
Yeah. Okay. One thing that I pointed out earlier on was that in February of this year, the Organization of African First Ladies for Development. I'm trying to find out if we have one for first gentlemen, but you know, yes, that's just me being petty. And you can imagine that's one
again. We'll be beaten up, right?
Yeah, the organization of look, it's just a genuine question. Okay, seriously. Yeah, the organization of African First Ladies for Development, elected their new leadership. Their 29th General Assembly, which was held under the theme "Beijing on Building on Beijing."
Mm.
Now, First Ladies building on Beijing, the theme. There's one thing about the African Union and themes. Building on Beijing, First Ladies championing women's leadership and rights through Africa, through African heritage. Now, it was, the African heritage and leadership part of it, basically points to the African, first of all, the women's presence in leadership on the African continent.
Yep.
And this is an organization made up of, First Ladies.
Yep.
So they intentionally made the theme like that so that it's in line with the African Union's theme of, especially the African heritage part, so that it's the theme coincides with the 30th anniversary of Beijing Declaration and the platform for action, and aligns with the African Union's 2025 theme of justice for Africans and people of African descent through reparations.
Yeah.
So this is basically going back to the presence of women in leadership, not just and also by going back to acknowledging that even during the liberation struggle, there are a lot of women that played a role in the liberation struggle that led to the independence of their respective countries.
Mm.
And and countries of their their neighbors and their fellow Africans. And it just goes to show that, because you see that when Africans, when African countries were beginning to get their independence, there have been a lot of more like a domination of the political structures basically across the continent. And the political structure again was dominated by mostly men.
Yeah.
And we are, now we are seeing the rise of the realization that look, from pre-colonial times to during the colonial times, women played a role. they played different roles that led to the independence of their respective countries.
Mm.
And now, you know, we don't, you know, we still want to continue acknowledging that, women played a significant role in pre-colonial Africa to during colonial Africa to post-colonial Africa.
Yep.
Yeah. And that also brings about the, you know, the reparations discussion, which is why we're listening to the voice of the vice president that was pointing out that, the whole reparation is more than just give me money. It, you have to factor in the part of acknowledgement.
Yeah.
That, well, we did this. It was wrong. And then we basically consider it more like a continental wide, conciliation.
Yeah.
You did this. It was wrong. And then, acknowledgement, apology, that's when the money aspect comes, in.
Also to highlight another particular talking point that had been taking place in the same week this week. So back on the 15th of April, I think that was Tuesday, same particular time that obviously I went to, you know, observe this particular discussion or platform where the vice president was speaking. Now, here's something unique, Helmut. At the same time, on the same day, at the United Nations Day in New York,
mm-hmm.
Another particular discussion was also taking place, obviously based upon this, and this was based upon the Permanent Forum on African Descent, as people were obviously talking at this particular platform there. Now, one speaker by the name of Hilary Brown, who was speaking on behalf of the Caribbean community, it's also known as the CARICOM, which is similar to the African Union, this particular body, this particular speaker, Hilary Brown, noted that the strengthened partnership between CARICOM and the AU, whose theme obviously is the theme that we highlighted, should be something that both of these particular zones have to leverage. Why? She says, with a strengthened partnership with the AU, the global reparations movement is at a defining moment and inflection point that is marked by a united global Africa finally coming together to speak with one voice on seeking justice for Africans and people of African descent. Now, Brown also called for a clear diplomatic and advocacy strategy to advance the agenda through joint action in the UN, the Commonwealth, and other intergovernmental bodies, and at a high-level forum on reparatory justice, which is some of the particular things that the vice president also cited.
Yeah.
Brown also noted that there is a need to negotiate with all the entities, and this is where things get interesting, Helmut, with all entities that benefited from African enslavement, governments, universities, the church, which is the Catholic Church, and the private sector. This is actually a good thing that she's highlighting. Do you know why?
Yeah, I know. Believe me, I do.
Yeah, because here's the thing, Helmut. There was another speaker speaking along in the panel discussion that the vice president that had to participate in.
Yeah.
Because obviously what the listeners heard now was the vice president's speech before the panel discussion at the same platform. There was another speaker there from the Open Society Foundation in the African context, a Mr. Brian Kagoro. And he has a legal background. Now, what he has been doing, he's actually the guy that we cited in our discussion of the pre-AU summit event regarding the theme that took place.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we played his voice, specifically just for context here for the listeners. Do we have an ad creeping up on us?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. Ad break. We come back, dear listeners.
We don't just use any yeast to brew the perfect Heineken. We use our unique A yeast. Why? It gives Heineken a unique balanced taste for that refreshing first. Ah, not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Are you ready for a fresh new flavor? Then enjoy the latest addition to the Vintook beer family. Vintook lemon flavored non-alcoholic beer. It's got the same taste that you love, but now with added lemon flavor to guarantee 100% refreshment in every sip. Now that's 100% real. Head to your nearest store and enjoy the new Vintook lemon flavored non-alcoholic beer for yourself today. Vintook, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Siwanashana mibia. Kamberera omwakarunga koe pamwe na imba.
Welcome back. The time is just a minute past the hour of 6, so that brings us to the end of our home run, but time to wrap it up. Where were you?
Yeah, so Mr. Brian Kagoro highlighted there specifically one critical component that we need to realize still in the modern day Namibia we live in. So, Kagoro noted, in the African continent, we still have a continuous crime that is still existing, the crime of theft. So you can look at this in terms of your particular role, your particular position, dear listeners, in terms of, for example, what has colonialism done to you and your lineage and your family. That's ultimately if you guys have these particular conversations at home or in your communities. But it has been these lasting effects. And these lasting effects have been this particular discussions why Mia Motley from Trinidad and Tobago, is it Trinidad and Tobago? Yeah. Has highlighted also particularly that she and the other island country, Bahamas, are exploring reparations against the United Kingdom. So this particular discussion is, yes, you know, the sheep have to come home, obviously. But it's obviously in the context in terms of how you go and collect the sheep to bring them home.
You know, the beautiful part is that, we're not just, you know, we are looking at who benefited from colonialism. And you see that, a lot of, countries basically showed up and, you know, to defend the interest that was, this was a public and private sector combo.
Yeah.
That you know that basically showed up, because if you look at every company, basically every company that operated and been you know and reaped millions of dollars in benefits whether about natural resources or free labor, basically coming from slavery, all these things there were a lot of private sector interests that was basically being defended by the governments. And one of the reasons why it took Belgium a very long time to acknowledge acknowledge the atrocities committed by King Leopold in the DRC was that they kept saying, I'm not sure if they're still using that excuse, that that was the king's own personal project, therefore it has nothing to do with with Belgium as a country. So you see that private interest, even though that you can see that a lot of them have changed their names.
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing I like about Wikipedia. Well, they show your old names and your current one. So bring up this discussion of, you know what, we know you as a country, you had your presence here, but also we are not, we are mindful of the fact that, of the companies that were operating here, but these countries were registered in your country.
Mm.
Yeah, these companies were registered in your country. So we are looking at both of you.
Yeah.
Hey. Not a good time to be British Petroleum right now.
No, bro. I mean, like I said, it's about going to go get those, that runaway flock of sheep.
How are you going
to
get it?
It's just about how you're going to get that flock of sheep back. Yeah. Because in light of all of this, ultimately, you know, this is still a particularly progressing scenario, dear listeners. We obviously now have to see how things will go from, I think it's from next month as well. Because obviously in the developments, a lot of things are coming through.
But this could not have come at the worst time for the UK economy.
I did bad, no, bro. No.
Someone's gonna be broke. Okay, but anyway.
No. If you understand how their banking system works.
Oh, yeah. You're right. If you understand how their banking system works. A point of correction on the economy. Oh, they're loaded.
No, they are.
Oh, yeah, they are.
They are.
Privately, they are. That's the part of it.
Yeah.
Publicly, they are broke.
And it's their government, unfortunately, that perpetuated this.
Yep. Their government paved the way. Man. This point, South America is going like, hola, Spain. Okay, 5 minutes. 5 minutes past the hour of six. It's time for Home Run guys to pack our bags and leave. And see you on Good Friday.
See you on Good Friday, guys.
Mukungulele kwa tuko maikuto amina apiri kwa mavchaziva. Muvere kusema app ato kasing chavu kamso. Zakare liferire. Mise kunani zencha. Kuzo wakwa kushimba lifera zari vuka kuya kwa lifasi la lifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba app. Mui kutwe kulibusi yemba santo ye mwietuna. Mui kole sfera fama kepe marizo hola mina. Hamu vone, imba encha ni encha farizwe ikopanya mifuta ya lifera matasa ep ilini kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyali nzwira mlimu. zengwi zefumane hamasfera sesfa app ya imba ize tatama Elsin ehangano oshiherero omaemuriro Catholic simane kakarunga Africans ni zengwi zengata Mulori zeze kacheno haiva mtavira kulisfera sakereke ya mina si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba fa 081-2358-063 kapa mlumere imele kwa digital@omalighty.com Muzive ni kufumana imba kacheno mkona kufumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Did you know that in Namibia over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Si wanasha Namibia, kamberera omwakarunga koe pamwe na imba. Inokara uri kwa nima yesiga, endera pamwe nethimbo muyuni wa technology. Imonena eimbiro joe mwene kongo dhiwe yopeke pamwe na imba. Imba oteta pamwe oshiwana no kwanja kakaneka onjimbo moshiwana ashihe sha Namibia. Moka epaka imba otamu adhika ehwata jo onjimbo dho ongereka dhayoroka. Gashi, ehangano ja Elsin, umaimburiro Joshi Herero, simane kakarunga ja Katolika Karoma, Joshi Mburu Sang Fortier no ongereka dhimwe. Tudengera nena ngere wapumba umaimbiro ongereka yoe gakarega wezwako. Koka epa ka imbako nora hetatu imwe mbarindatu tano hetatu nora hamano datu nenge ututumine o email ko digital@omalighty.com otovoruku adha oka epa ka imbako App Store noko Google Play Store imonena imbagoe nena.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsin Ehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Africans Sung for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-063. You can also email us at digital@omalighty.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.